Welcome to the Two Brothers and Their Sports Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Arif.
And I'm your other co-host, Darsh.
Today on the show, we have three topics to get to in a pretty loaded episode. We're going to start off by discussing Juan Soto being acquired by the New York Yankees and the other acquisitions that they've made this offseason as they push for the World Series. Then we're going to be talking about the NBA in-season tournament final set between the Indiana Pacers and the Los Angeles Lakers, how the Pacers got there, how the Lakers got there, and then our prediction for that game. And then finally, our marquee segment as we go into the final regular season game of the fantasy football play of the fantasy football season. Two bros, two picks. Each of us is going to give you two guys that we think you should definitely add to your bench. Consider starting this week if you're in a pinch and if you need that boom or bust guy to get you into the playoffs. But Arsh, get us started with Juan Soto being acquired by the Yankees. What does this deal mean?
Yeah, so this was a very, very big deal for the Yankees. Acquiring a star right now in his prime, he's only 25 years old, which is crazy to think about when you look at the fact that he's been in the year for a good amount of time now. He's been a superstar since he stepped foot into the major leagues, and now the Yankees got him. They needed an outfielder. They had a desperate need there. The whole time they were looking to get an outfielder, they also got Alex Verdugo, another outfielder from the Boston Red Sox, a rare Boston Red Sox and Yankees trade. And these guys are going to immensely help. Juan Soto is an amazing hitter, had a career high in home runs last year, amazing hitter, but they also get two guys that aren't bad in the field but can hit. I don't expect Trent Grissom or Alex Verdugo to start immediately. Like, I could see some spots where Stanton might be there, and maybe Juan Soto might be DHing. The point is, This gives the Yankees so much more flexibility to have these guys. Now they've got Stanton, who's been a major threat since he came into the league. Hopefully he can kind of ever bounce back. He's been hurt for the past couple years now. They've got Stanton. They've got Judge, who had a great season last year, was the MVP the year before that. They had and then now they added Verdugo, who's very, very good. And then Juan Soto, who's going to be in the lineup every day that he's eligible to be, except for rest days. So when you look at this team, and especially the outfield, one of the most star-studded batters in the MLB, the question is now, how does their pitching work? Their pitching can't all just rely on Gerrit Cole, and that's something that they're trying to also fix in their offseason. And not only are we talking about their pitching, it's just the success of the team. They had such good players last year at specific positions, but the team wouldn't come together. They didn't have a lot of success, especially for the Yankees. So will this trade impact their success? I believe so, and I really do hope that it makes them good enough to get over the hump. And if there was a guy in the league that was on the trade market other than Ohtani that could get him over the hump, it would be Juan Soto.
Yeah, I agree here. I think I just want to read you their starting lineup right now. So you go to first base, Anthony Rizzo. Second is Gleyber Torres. Shortstop's Anthony Volpe. And then third baseman's DJ LeMahieu. So very solid infield there. Now their outfielders are stellar at this point. Juan Soto's playing right. Aaron Judge's center. And then Alex Verdugo's left. Obviously, we don't know if he's going to immediately start. And then you have Stanton DHing that can also play outfield. Then your catcher is Austin Wells. So you have a pretty well-rounded team there in terms of bats and in terms of defensive ability as well. And if you think about it, last year you talked about the outfielders and the Yankees' dire need for one. Think about it. They had IKF, a gold glove shortstop, playing outfield last year. And obviously he can play many positions, but still it was new to him. And then you had Harrison Bader, who's no longer in the starting lineup, playing in the outfield as well.
He's not even on the Yankees anymore. He's gone now.
And he was acquired from the St. Louis Cardinals midway through like a year and a half ago. So he never even – and he was hurt when he first got to the roster. So he never had time to get fully acclimated. So this move means a lot to the Yankees. It means a lot to the power hitting as well. We know Alex Verdugo obviously batted just below 300 last year. Juan Soto, when he's healthy – key when he's healthy, is a stellar athlete. We know that. We know he can play. And on the Padres, at times he got very, very hot last year. I think he'll work
even more than that when he was on the Nationals before that.
Yeah, led that was a different World level. Series. That was a different level. That was
top in the league.
Exactly. And obviously we know his talent. We know what he is coming out of or coming into the MLB. But I think that this move for the Yankees is great. The fact that they gave up three pitchers is not ideal, especially because their pitching roster has not been great. They lost Luis Severino to the Mets this offseason, in addition to Michael King, who got traded, and then two other pitchers that they also traded for.
And then on top of that, in the Rule 50 draft, Are a guy that we interviewed, Mitch Spence, got drafted
One of their
number one
top pitching
overall.
prospects.
Yep, Triple A, amazing pitcher, got drafted number one overall, was very promising, got
To
drafted
the
number one
Athletics,
overall.
yeah.
Yeah, the number two pick was also a New York Yankees pitcher. And then I believe in the first 10 picks, there was also another Yankees pitcher. So
Yeah.
they do have a big problem right now in pitching,
And
especially when you look at Carlos Rodon.
yeah, exactly. And if one of these guys in the rotation were to get hurt for a long period of time, or and they're very, very thin at this position. So if something were to happen, it's not going to be great for the Yankees. They could be on a skid. And if you think about this, going back to the starting lineup, they have the Martian there also, who got hurt at the end of last year. Remember that. So this team is scary in terms of potential with the bats. I think it's just pitching that they really need to focus on. But in general, this acquisition for Juan Soto, I love it for the New York Yankees. I love it for the city. And I love what it does for the roster. It gives Aaron Boone way more opportunity, way more versatility, and a lot more options with this lineup. But I also think it's going to be good for the fans. It's going to be good for the World Series hopes. And I think on paper, it looks like a team that can really thrive this year. I just think it's got to be very well-rounded and be able to produce in the playoffs. I think that's the biggest thing.
And like you said, the Martian Dominguez looked amazing last year when he got
Exactly.
in. So
First
he's
at bat was a home
developing,
run.
yeah, he's developing very incredibly so far. Volpe has been, he's been mediocre
Gold Glove
last
winner.
year,
Gold Glove winner.
but yeah, but other than that, mediocre
Yeah.
when you look at the bats, but
Yeah.
he's going to develop too. It's the same thing that happened with Derek Jeter. It's the same thing that happens with most prospects. Most prospects aren't the Corbin Carrolls that come straight in and are just amazing, lead their teams to World Series. It doesn't really work like that. But I mean, these d rookies are developing. The only problem is their pitching. They've got to find a way to bring back some pitchers, whether it's leafs or starters. They traded so many great pitchers and they let go of more in the Rule 50 draft. I mean, where are you going to get pitchers
They
from?
have
It's
two
tough.
big guys. They have Gerrit Cole and they have Carlos Rodon, and that's pretty much it.
And Carlos Rodon was horrible last year. He
Exactly.
had,
And he had a
he
back
was,
injury lingering all year, too.
and he also, he had the third worst ERA, which I believe for 60 plus innings pitched, I believe. And that might have
Yeah.
been the AL or that might have just been in the entire MLB. I mean, that is atrocious for a number two pitcher for an MLB team. Now, I don't know if Yamamoto, the pitcher from Japan, becomes immediately eligible for the MLB, but I don't think he's going to be in the major leagues this year. So, I
Yeah.
mean, where are you going to get this pitching from? It's going to be from trades and it's not going to be big guys. And you kind of do need at least a three, maybe four starting pitcher deep, like good starting pitchers
Exactly.
to have a good rotation.
I think they have three if you want to count Nestor Cortez, who was obviously in the Cy Young running
Yeah,
2 years
he was
ago
very good. He was
and
very
early
good 2 years
last year.
ago.
Yeah, he is. But I just think and they
Rodon
got
doesn't
they
count.
exactly.
Rodon
They
does not
did
count.
great building up Carlos Rondon. I mean, not Carlos Rondon, Nestor Cortez to that point, and obviously he's been great. But same thing, he battles with injuries. Gerrit Cole can't pitch every single night, and he wants Cy Young, but he can't pitch every single night. That's the biggest problem. They need more depth, and they need more guys that can excel. So I think that's the biggest thing. And with no salary cap, the Yankees should be able to acquire someone relatively quickly, in my opinion. I think that should happen in the near future. All right, so now let's move on to the NBA in-season tournament. And the finals are set this Saturday, December 9th at 8:30 p.m. between the Indiana Pacers and the Los Angeles Lakers. So quickly, the format for this, how it worked and how we got here. What happened is there were six group stages and six groups. Imagine it like the World Cup group stages. And the winner of each group was put into a bracket like a regular tournament, one game style tournament, and then they obviously have eight spots. So the other two teams were determined based on point differential. Coming into the tournament, the Celtics were favored to win, ended up losing to the Pacers, who also just beat the Bucks. So now they're in the finals against the Los Angeles Lakers, who just beat the Pelicans, and so we're here. And my prediction for this game, and it means a lot to these players, obviously, because you get a salary bonus as well, and then you get the recognition for for being the first annual winner of the NBA in-season tournament. I'm going to pick the Pacers here. Now, if you look at Tyrese Haliburton, he's really been able to distribute the ball at an elite level like he has the past few years, but especially this year, it's been great. And he's doing the scoring as well. He plays 34 minutes a game, so he's not overpowering, like playing 48 minutes a game. And he has 27 points per game, 4 rebounds per game and 12 assists per game. So as long as Tyrese Haliburton's in the lineup, you know that they're going to produce the Pacers offense is. And you know that they're going to be a sneaky offensive team. And they've done that. They beat the Celtics, they beat the 76ers, and they beat the Bucks. on it, the two of those teams in the NBA in-season tournament, and now they're in the finals. I think LeBron and the Lakers, they just won by 50, almost 50 points to the Pelicans, but I still think that this is the Pacers' win here. I think they should be able to come home with the trophy.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to disagree with you here. I'm gonna go with the Lakers winning this, and just imagine the news, the headlines, when LeBron James wins the first ever in-season tournament
It would
in
be
30
crazy.
years. When they talk about it, they're gonna say LeBron James, the GOAT of basketball, which some may say, some disagree with, we disagree with, won the first in-season tournament. If he wins this, this thing will be set for years and years to come as a big event. And you know what? I do think that he's gonna be going after this for his legacy. If not just for that, it's all the other guys on the team. It's a chance to get LeBron James somewhat of a ring, somewhat of a title, but even though it's not the actual NBA Finals, and I do think the Lakers are going to play their butts off. I think
Yeah.
LeBron James is going to be absolutely spectacular in this game. He's going to be driving, even if he doesn't get hot from the line, which I don't think he will. I just think that he's going to be playing so hard because he wants it. He doesn't need the money, but he does want it for his legacy, and he wants to be the first in-season tournament winner. You look at the Pacers, really, it's just Haliburton carrying them. They barely won yesterday. They probably shouldn't have won. He shot a 30-foot three. It was a very good shot, but they probably shouldn't have gone past. I just find it very hard, even with the Lakers' flawed team, to be able to go past the Lakers, who have been absolutely dominating every single game. And you know what? This might have been one of LeBron's narratives telling his teammates, this is something that we have the chance to win. No one really knows what it's about. It's the first ever. We have a chance to get this, guys. Let's go after it. And they've been absolutely spectacular. I'm going with the Lakers here. I think it'll be a nice 15, 20-point win, probably around 10, 15 points. Because LeBron is going to be going after this with everything he has. He's going to play the most minutes he's played this entire season, and they have a lineup that is built for games like this against a one-man team. So I do think that the Lakers are going to win this.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. But I also think, imagine the NBA headlines. LeBron James, you talked about it, wins first NBA in-season tournament, and you know that you can't just get rid of a tournament after what some people call the GOAT wins it at almost 40 years old. And we know the stats, the level he's playing at, the
It's
stats he's
never
playing at. It's
gonna lose.
unprecedented. Yeah, exactly. And if he were to win this, the tournament would be here to stay. Like, think about it. The NBA obviously is losing viewership. The headlines they would get from that, the start that LeBron James would, or like the influence that LeBron James would have on that tournament from just winning the first one would be crazy. And you talked about it. They're built to play a one-man team. But the problem is, I think just Tyrese Haliburton, he's
He
beat
can
these incredible.
take over the
That's
game.
true. And he's beat these incredible teams already. Like, if you look at, first of all, if you look at Milwaukee at 27 points, yeah, he shot 11 for 19, so he's fairly efficient. But then he had 26, 26, 37, and 33 against Philly. So he had 27 against Milwaukee, 26 against Boston, and 30 or 33 against Philly. So he's playing at a very high level. He's able in those matchups to excel. He's not folding under pressure. Now, maybe in this game, that's going to be a little bit different because he's the main ball handler, the main carrier of this team. But and you bring up a good point that the Lakers are set defensively for that. And the LeBron James point as well, but I just think that the Pacers have beat teams better than this before. They have done that. And even if LeBron has that little extra oomph, that little extra grit, I still don't think it's going to be enough to beat the Indiana Pacers, in my opinion. All right, now we're going to move on to our marquee segment, as Arsh called it last episode. Two bros, two picks. Each of us is going to give you two guys that we think are must starts this week in fantasy football, or you should be adding to your bench for the next 3 weeks going into the fantasy playoffs, and 4 weeks if your league plays week 18. But Arsh, who is your first pick this week?
So my first pick is going to be Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. They have a couple other running backs, but for me, this is the guy that's going to be number one on the depth chart. And the reason is he is the running back from LSU. He got drafted in the first round a couple years back. He's only 5'7", but 24 years old. He's built like a bowling ball. He's 5'7", 207 pounds. Absolutely built and stunning. And you see it. He is so fast on the field, but he has that power back archetype that you would see in Madden builds and create a player builds. And in this game, I do think that that's going to be valuable against the Buffalo Bills. Their run defense is not very good. Their run defense is not their strength. It's definitely their pass defense. And Mahomes has been making a couple mistakes the past couple games. They're going to rely on the run game, and they're especially going to be relying on it when they get into the red zone. It's not going to be any of those fancy shovel pass it to Travis Kelce plays. It's not going to be any of that, especially against this Buffalo Bills team that will make you feel the burn if you do make any mistakes like that. If you accidentally turn the ball over, you're going to feel it when Josh Allen comes right back and goes right back at you and goes at your throat. So instead, they're going to be running it when they get down there. And the guy that I think they're going to be giving it to is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He hasn't had a spectacular season. His high this season is 12 points. He had a touchdown, 15 carries for 55 yards. That's when he was getting a lot of the target, a lot of the carries. He's not a small target in the receiving game. Last game, he had two targets, and he wasn't the starter. Now that he's the starter, he's projected 10.6 points. Again, only rostered in 11% of leagues, but he's projected 10.6 points, which is more than my running back too. So when you look at this, the point is the guy is a great runner. He's going to be used in the passing game, which we know Mahomes can do. He can chuck the ball down. That's why Pacheco is so valuable. I do think that this is a great pick for you if you need a running back or if you need a flex.
Yeah, so my first pick here, and he was going to be my second pick, but I think it makes more sense to put him here. Give me the other Kansas City running back. I'm going Jerick McKinnon here. And I think you could really just place a bet on whichever one you want to do well. But the reason I picked Jerick McKinnon is because of the receiving work. Now, the reason, and I think the main reason why Isaiah Pacheco has been going off the last 2 weeks is because Jerick McKinnon has been out. Look at the receiving work by Isaiah Pacheco. He's getting over four receptions a game in the last two games because he's on the field more, playing the third down role, and he's getting all those receptions, those dump offs from Patrick Mahomes, because we know the offense is not functioning at the level it has in the past few years. So now you have Jerick McKinnon coming back. He's not going to be out this week. They just ruled him out active for this game against the Buffalo Bills. He has a pretty good matchup, a below average run defense in the Buffalo Bills, tend to get gashed by big plays, and we know Jerick McKinnon is fast, is quick, is elusive, and he can do things in open space. And three, we know he has a receiving work. So especially if you're in a PPR league, this is a really, really valuable guy. And if you look at the stats he's had this season, he usually averages around two carries and around two catches. But this guy is extremely efficient with his yards after catch. If you look at his work this year, usually averages around two carries a game, around two catches a game, but he's very efficient with those catches, usually averaging around 20 yards total per game in terms of receiving work. Now imagine that to four catches or five catches. This is the main receiving asset for Patrick Mahomes. He's going to be an outlet, and we know he likes him near the red zone. They're going to have him carry the ball as well. I like Clyde Edwards-Helaire as more of a downhill runner, especially if they're up against the Bills. You talked about using the clock, but if they're behind, I like Jerick McKinnon. So I think both are really good guys, but I think if you want a higher floor, you could go Jerick McKinnon.
Yeah, I do love both of those picks. No matter which running back you choose from the Chiefs, both of them are going to do very well. So no matter which one's available, no matter which one you choose, both of them are going to do very well. So my second pick is going to be a tight end for the Houston Texans. It's Brevin Jordan. He's a tight end for the Houston Texans. And I picked him up last week because my tight end ended up having a bye, Cole Kmet. So last week he had 9.4 points, had 75. He played 75% of the snaps, had five targets from CJ Stroud. Why is a backup tight end getting this, you may ask? Because Dalton Schultz was out, and he's out again this week. We see that CJ Stroud got very comfortable using Brevin Jordan in the week that he had him as a starter, and I believe that's going to continue. Brevin Jordan last week also had 64 yards. He's only rostered in also 11% of leagues, but he's a good tight end.
And
He's
he
the
had
starter.
multiple, to add to your point, he had multiple catches of 20 plus yards last week. He was used downfield.
He's the starter for a team and a quarterback that is in the MVP conversation as a rookie. That's winning rookie of the year, undoubtedly. That broke the rookie passing record. They don't run the ball a ton. They're going to throw it, and Dalton Schultz was a very good target for CJ Stroud. He's gone now. This is the next tight end up, and we've seen that CJ Stroud likes him. So they're playing the New York Jets. They don't have a great defense for passing. And it's not even, I mean, you could say Sauce Gardner, but that's not the point. The point is the tight end. He's not getting guarded. If Brevin Jordan gets guarded by linebackers, he's dusting them 9 times out of 10. They're not guarding him, especially from the Jets. There's no linebacker that can really cover him well and also not respect CJ Stroud's running ability. So I think that he's going to have a very good game, probably over 10 points. Going to get a lot of the targets, and PPR is going to get even more. And hopefully, he can get a touchdown in the red zone, which we know CJ Stroud loves to throw the ball and loves to get his guys some touchdowns. Tank Dell's also up. This guy's a huge factor in the passing game this week.
Yeah, so my second pick is going to be a Green Bay Packers wide receiver with Christian Watson out. And you guys are probably like, oh, you're going to pick Jaden Reed. Oh, you're going to pick Romeo Doubs. No, my guy is Dontavian Wicks. He is the
Love
third
him.
string. Yeah, he's the third string wide receiver for the Packers. But we know Jordan Love's been playing well, and that coincides with Dontavian Wicks' recent production. Starting in week eight, he's had four targets, four targets, four targets, five targets, four targets. So consistently getting that work. And he works on the outside where Christian Watson played 63% of his snaps. Now, if you look at the fact that Christian Watson's out this week, a lot of people would say, oh, move up Romeo Doubs. Oh, move up Christian Watson in your rankings. And I mean, move up Jaden Reed. And while that may be true, I think the biggest impact this is going to have is on Dontavian Wicks. He works outside, he works on the perimeter, and he's been used more in the central of the field, center of the field, sorry, with Jordan Love playing well, and he can run deep routes. He has like rubber hands. He's able to catch everything, and everything that's come his way. We saw he had a great move last week to get the first down late in the game against the Chiefs. Again, his production has been going up. His usage has been going up. His snaps have been going up. And Jordan Love's playing well, and Christian Watson's out. So look for this guy to get reps where Christian Watson should be. And remember, Christian Watson's been playing well recently. So Jordan Love is going to be looking at that Christian Watson type role a lot more this week because he knows it's been successful the past two. So my first pick is going to be Jerick McKinnon, running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. And my second pick is Dontavian Wicks, wide receiver for the Green Bay Packers.
And my first pick was Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the other running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. Second pick, Brevin Jordan, the tight end for the Houston Texans.